Last Sabbath, I spoke on the fruits of the Spirit. The fruits of the Spirit are markers that we can gauge whether or not we are growing as a Christian. I want to start there again, but this week I want to look at one in particular. So let's turn back to the book of Galatians. We're going to be looking at Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23. Again, something that I suggested that maybe you memorize these two scriptures or write them down someplace where you can look at them occasionally and ask yourself, am I growing in all these areas? So let's turn back there and start in Galatians 5, once again, starting in verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such, there is no law. Today, I'd like to focus in on one of the fruits of the Spirit. Now, I could easily focus in and give a sermon on any one of these fruits of the Spirit because they're all very important. They all give us an understanding of who God is, an understanding of His very nature. In fact, I was planning on assigning the fruits of the Holy Spirit to our sermonette and sermon speakers and maybe even a Bible study between the days of Unleavened Bread and Pentecost, but that didn't quite work out the way we had hoped that it would. So today I want to focus in on one of the fruits of the Spirit, and that is love. I don't think it's a coincidence that love is listed first in the fruits of the Spirit. In fact, I believe that it is the base for all the other fruits of the Spirit. Without love, I don't believe you could accomplish much in the way of developing the other eight fruits of the Spirit. How could you have joy if you didn't have love in your life? You remember last week I mentioned that one of the ways we develop joy is by watching other people succeed. If you don't have love, you would have no joy in knowing that someone else was having success in their life. And can you really have peace in your life if you didn't start with love? What about long-suffering? Could you develop and grow long-suffering for somebody else for all the things they do that might, you know, drive you crazy now and then? Could you develop that long-suffering with other people if you didn't have love as a base? And we could go on through the list of the rest of the fruits of the Spirit there. There's kindness, goodness, faith, gentleness, and self-control. Which of these godly characteristics could you develop without first starting with love? This is why God gave love as a commandment to His people back in the book of Leviticus. If we turn back to Leviticus chapter 19, Leviticus chapter 19, we'll be reading verse 18. Law here given to God's people. Leviticus 19 and verse 18, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. I fully believe that if you don't have love, you would have a hard time, if not an impossible time, developing any of the other fruits of the Spirit. Now that brings us to a problem, and that is found over in Matthew 24 and verse 12. Matthew 24 and verse 12. Let's turn over there and read these words of Christ. Matthew 24 and verse 12, we read, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Jesus Christ here was answering a question about the end of time. What will it be like? We often have the questions like that too, right? Are we in the last days? And we look to signs, you know, is this person going to be the one to usher in the beast power? There seems to be a lot of earthquakes going on right now. Is this the start of the beginning of the end? Are earthquakes just going to keep increasing and getting worse? Is this something we should be looking for? Is this pandemic that we're going through right now? Is this the beginning of the disease and pestilence that Christ spoke of? We keep our eyes on the scene of the world looking for signs that Christ and the prophets spoke of, but we are surrounded by a sign of the end times. That is, that the love of many will wax cold. What does this phrase, wax cold, mean? Some versions have changed the wording to grow cold, and that's fine. It's, you know, that can be a good definition of it. Wax can mean to grow or change position. But the King James Version has the phrase worded as that the love of many will wax cold. I like this wording. This gives me a strong visual to think about. Let's think about wax for a minute. What does wax do when it gets cold? It solidifies. It becomes set. It gets hard. Once wax becomes cold and solidifies, it no longer flows. This is the condition of man in the last days, and there's a good description of it in 2 Timothy. Let's turn back to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3, we'll be starting in verse 1 and reading through verse 5. Second Timothy 3 and verse 1, but know this, that in the last days, there we are again, there's the timing, it's the last days, that's what we're looking at. In the last days, perilous times will come. Now, perilous means dangerous. And what will make the end times so dangerous? Let's read on verse 2. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such turn away. What do we see in that description? We see mankind with a heart full of love. We read of love mentioned several times in that description of end times. But the object of their love is wrong. They don't have that love for others. That love has waxed cold and it's stopped flowing. And because they don't have that love, you'll notice they don't have any of the other fruits of the Spirit either. In fact, they are so far from God that we're told to turn away from them. It's that important that we just stay away from them. Do you think things are that bad yet? We're in some pretty remarkable times right now. At this point, you could pretty much say that 2020 is a disaster, and we're only halfway through it. I think we'll look back at this year as a great turning point. Not great as good, but great as in huge. And I think things are going to be taking a turn for the worse. But nonetheless, 2020 so far has not been one of the best years. But hard times bring out the best of people sometimes. It also brings out the worst of people. I think the attitudes that we would label as the worst of people are starting to outnumber the ones we would label as the best of people. And the ironic thing is that these attitudes that people are developing, these ones that we would consider the worst of the people, are the ones that our media and our social platforms seem to embrace. The love of many is waxing cold. In the middle of a pandemic, you know, something we haven't seen before in our lifetime, unless you're over, you know, somewhere around 100 years old. In the middle of a pandemic, I have seen and heard of stories of people getting into fights in grocery stores over whether or not the other person should wear a mask. I have had people tell me that they were going to a grocery store or a hardware store or something. I don't remember exactly what the place was they were going to, but they had this attitude that they said they were just daring anybody to ask them why they weren't wearing a mask, and they were going to tell them to just mind their own business. They were ready for it. How could we become so confrontational over something like wearing a mask to prevent the spread of a virus? I actually know somebody that was wearing a mask in a store, and it upset somebody else in the store so bad that they tried to spit on her. What is going on? This is what it looks like when love waxes cold. When love waxes cold, when love hardens, it becomes set. We only see things one way. Our opinions become more important than people's feelings or their opinions. So our challenge as Christians is, as the world becomes more and more loveless out there, that we do not become more and more loveless in here, in our heart. We have to be careful not to allow the influence of the world to creep into our hearts and into our congregation. As I said, we're in the process of working out the details to be able to meet together in person next Sabbath at our hall. And I'm very excited to get back together, as I'm sure many of you are as well. But you know what? Some may not be ready to meet together yet. Some may not feel comfortable meeting face to face. Even though there hasn't been much talk about it in the news lately because there's so much else going on in the world, there is still a virus going around. And so as a result of that, some may not be ready to meet together again. Some people may not like that. Some may say that decision is a lack of faith. We'll look at faith near the end of the sermon. Some of you, when we get back together, you may want to wear a mask. I don't think it's going to be required. But what will our attitudes be towards those who either do or do not want to wear a mask? Will what is happening in the world around us make its way into our congregation? Do we view mask wearing like so many that you're either trying to infect the world or you're just giving in to the overhyping of the virus? You're becoming a sheep being led around by the government? I think there's been a growing divide in the world lately, and I think it's been festering and growing for a long time, and I really think it's starting to manifest itself in the most unlikely of ways, with whether or not we wear a mask to prevent the spread of a virus. Do you have a stance on this issue? Is your opinion of it so important to you that you would let it bring division into our congregation? Would Paul wear a mask if he were here with us today? Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. I think the answer to that question would depend on the desire of the person he was trying to reach. 1 Corinthians 9, starting in verse 19, we'll be reading through verse 23. He writes, "For though I be free from all men, yet I have made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law." Being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ. "That I might gain them that are without the law." Verse 22, "To the weak I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partakers thereof with you." Did Paul not have his own opinions on things? I'm sure that he did. But he didn't allow his opinion to be so strong in things that weren't an issue of salvation so as to drive others away. Would you be willing to wear a mask if someone asked that you would when you're talking to them? Or is your opinion of wearing a mask so strong that you would refuse? Some would even say that wearing a mask shows a lack of faith. We'll look at faith near the end of the sermon. As we come together, some may want to practice social distancing. When we meet together, you know what? If you are want to practice the social distancing and somebody starts coming too close to you, you know what? Let's just have a sign right now. You raise your hand up there. Just let them know. Stop. I don't want you to come too close to me. That's going to be our sign. So anybody who feels like someone's getting, you know, walking to you and you don't want someone in your face, just hold your hand up. Let them know, "I'd rather you didn't come over here." Again, some may not like that. But would you Would you let love allow you to respect somebody else's wishes concerning it? I mean, really respect their desire? Or would you become so offended that you just wave back and walk away? Nah, I don't want to talk to you anyway. Would you ignore their request? Would you go up to them anyway and say, it's only me, it's all right? Again, think of Paul's attitude. Do we have to be so opinionated that we either get our feelings hurt or that we're willing to hurt other people's feelings? Some may even say that to require social distancing shows a lack of faith. We will look at faith near the end of the sermon. Part of the problem with this whole virus is that we have been given so much information and so much misinformation. We've been told not to wear a mask. It doesn't do any good. Then we're told to wear a mask. Then we're told to wear gloves. Then we're told not to wear gloves. Then we're told to wear gloves, but change them every time you touch something. We're told to use hand sanitizer, not to use hand sanitizer. We've been told that the virus remains active on surfaces for days, maybe weeks. We've been told that the virus remains active for only a few hours on surfaces. We've been told it hangs in the air for hours. We've been told that it drops to the ground instantly. There's so much unknown about this virus that at times it feels like they're saying, I don't know, let's just try this. However, it's interesting, there are so many people who don't know anything about viruses who feel like they have all the answers. They know what we need, they know what we need to do. The fact is, until a vaccination is created for this virus, we may have reoccurrences over it again and again, maybe for years. Should we even talk about a vaccination? I mean, that's another hot topic. What if a vaccination were discovered to fight the virus? Would you get it? Would you have an opinion about it? Would your opinion determine how you view others depending on their decision whether or not to get vaccinated? You see, the subject of whether or not to be vaccinated is another one of those dividing topics in our society, and it has worked its way into the church. It is definitely a subject that many have their opinion on. If someone in the congregation were to tell you that they were going to get the flu shot this coming Wednesday, what would your response be? Would it be one of love, or would you just want them to know your opinion? Would you answer them with, well, I certainly would never allow anyone to give me a flu shot. I don't need that. You know what's in those vaccines? God will protect me from the flu. We may even look at getting vaccinated as a lack of faith. We will look at faith near the end of the sermon. What would a response that is rooted in love sound like? How about, do you need a ride? Or can I help you in any way? You see, love's response is, how can I help? And then if you feel that strongly about it, then you can go home and pray for that person. You can put them first in your life. We don't always know or want to take time to understand the driving force behind someone else's decisions if they disagree with our opinions. You realize that a person in the church, especially if they've been in the church for a while, has already struggled with a decision like that, whether or not to be immunized, long before that decision was made. Yet underlying health issues, or maybe even health issues of someone they are a caretaker for, has pushed them to make the decision that they have made. We should never judge somebody because of their decision about their health, even if it does not agree with our opinion. Sometimes we become so strong in our opinions that we want to equate it to God's law. Isn't that what Jesus accused the Pharisees of? Let's turn back to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15, and we all know, you know, we say we're Sadducees, Pharisees, scribes, and we're all like, oh, don't put me in that group. I don't want to be in that group. Those are awful people. Christ called them hypocrites. They had no love. Matthew 15, starting in verse 3. He answered them and said, why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his mother or father. Thus you have made the commandments of God of no effect by your tradition, by your belief, by your opinions. Verse 7, hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Do we sometimes teach our own commandments? The Pharisees replaced the commandments of God with their own commandments. It was no longer laws about love. Do you know what the United Church of God's teaching is on vaccinations? It is in line with the teachings of the Bible. Turn with me, if you will, to, That's right. The Bible does not speak of immunizations. The Bible does not speak of being vaccinated as a sin. So to truly love one another, we allow each other to make our own decisions, and then we respect each other. Some will be immunized and some will not. It's a private matter. It's not a spiritual matter. It's a private matter. And this is something that should not be a cause for division within our congregation. You see, it's easy for me to say you shouldn't take medicine. And that's what a vaccine is. It's a form of medication. It's just injected rather than taking a pill or something like that. If that's my opinion, it's easy for me to say, I can all day long say you should not take any kind of medication. It's easy for me to say that. Because I don't have migraines. And I don't have trouble breathing. And I don't have a severe infection or cancer or diabetes or any other ailment that requires medication regularly. Some would say that taking medication or being vaccinated shows a lack of faith. Again, we're going to talk about faith near the end of the sermon. There is enough lack of love in the world. We need to make sure we are not allowing that virus, that disease, that hardness of heart into our lives and bringing that into our congregation. Ephesians 4. Let's turn over to Ephesians 4. We'll be reading verses 1 through 3. Ephesians 4, starting in verse 1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you are called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That's our job. Where the New King James Version says calling, the King James Version says it's our vocation. To do what? To endeavor. Endeavor is a strong attempt. Endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And how do we do that? By using the fruits of the Spirit, of which love is the base. Again, verse 2, bearing with one another in love. Let's turn over to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. Believe it or not, we're going to talk about faith a little bit. Hebrews 11 is known as the faith chapter. I'm going to start reading verses 1 through 3. Hebrews 11. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, for by it the elders obtained a good testimony. By faith we understood that the words were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. Faith is a belief in God, not just that God exists. We're told even the demons believe that. They believe that and they tremble. But we believe that God can and will do for us what he has promised. To believe that there is a reward at the end of this age, to believe that the sacrifice of Jesus Christ paid our penalty for sin. We can read through this chapter about people who we look at as the heroes of faith. I want to look at just a couple of verses. Let's drop down to verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is rewarder of those who diligently seek him. We have to have faith in that. Let's drop down to verse 13. These all died, speaking of these heroes of faith that are there, these all died not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. They were assured of them. How were they assured of them? They believed. They internalized it. They were assured of them. They embraced them, and they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. That was their faith. They had a faith in God, that God is going to do what he says he's going to do, and that is get us through this world and take us into his kingdom. Faith is knowing that there's a reward at the end of this life. Let's drop down to verse 39 and 40. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. They haven't received it yet. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. We have the same promises. So faith is knowing that there's a reward at the end of this life. Having faith means having confidence in God that he is who he says he is and that he will do what he says he will do. Having faith means believing that there's a reward for living a life motivated by love. Does that mean we're going to be protected from all things like the coronavirus if we just have faith? Can we say that if we have faith, we don't need to take medication, we don't need to social distance or wear a mask or take any other precautions, because nothing bad will happen to us as long as we have faith? As I said, the Hebrews 11 is made up of many of the heroes of faith, and some not mentioned by name, but it does speak of those who had faith. Hebrews 11, verse 33. Who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouths of lions. Do you have enough faith that if a lion were in the street roaming around that you could go up to it because God would protect you from it? We could simply walk up to it and close its mouth and allow everybody to come and take it into custody. Whatever you do with a lion walking in the street. Can nothing bad happen to you if you have faith? Let's look at some other heroes of faith mentioned here, starting in verse 36. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, they were slain with a sword, they wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. What about the apostles? Did they not have faith? They all died untimely deaths, except possibly John. Let's look at the words of Christ before he sent the apostles out to start the work. Mark 16. Let's turn over to Mark 16. We'll be reading verses 17 and 18. Mark 16, starting in verse 17. And these signs will follow those who believe in my name. They will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will take up serpents. And if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover. If you were walking into church services and there were a couple copperhead snakes on the path, what would your response be? Would you just walk through them? Would it be a lack of faith to go around if someone else is like, oh no, copperheads, I don't want to be, and would you say, you have no faith? Jesus Christ himself said snakes wouldn't harm you. Is it a lack of faith to wear a mask, to social distance, to take medications? Sometimes we make things about faith that really aren't about faith. Faith is having enough belief in God that it motivates us to live as he commands us to do, knowing that it is in our best interest. And that if some kind of danger comes along, and sometimes we have to make a decision, even, you know, you think back, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they didn't have faith that God was going to bring them back out of that furnace alive. They had faith that there was a reward for them if they didn't disobey God. Esther said, if I perish, I perish. Her faith wasn't that God was going to bring her through this and she was going to live. Her faith was that she was going to do what was right. Let's jump from the faith chapter to the love chapter, because there's an important message here that sometimes gets overlooked. Because we can turn faith into a contest of who has more. Well, I can't believe that person did that. They must not have as much faith as I do. That's not how we should be looking at each other. 1 Corinthians 13, starting in verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Now, I don't know what the tongues of angels is. We could take this different ways. It could be knowledge. It could be a beautiful voice, a singing type of voice. It could be many things. We could take it as many things, but it doesn't matter, because what's being taught here is that if we didn't have love to go along with this talent, we're nothing more than a bunch of noise that nobody wants to hear. We're not going to get through to anybody. No one's going to care what we have to say. Verse 2, and though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. Faith so strong that we could move mountains is nothing without love. You know, we all think that, we all read that scripture and you're like, oh man, this mustard seed is so small and mountains are so huge. And if I just had to, I would love to be able to just move a mountain. But if you didn't have love, it's nothing. It just doesn't matter. What is it about love that is so much more important than having faith? Let's drop on down to verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, we'll be reading through verse 8. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. It does not behave rudely. It does not seek its own. It is not provoked. It thinks no evil. It does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Love is the character of God. We are to be developing God-like character. Let's drop on down here to the bottom of the chapter. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13. And now abide faith, hope, and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. In fact, we saw that you can have as much as you possibly can have of the others, and it just doesn't matter if you don't have love to go along with it. Love should be our motivation in all that we do. Everything we do should be motivated by love. Let's turn over to John chapter 13. John chapter 13, we're going to read some of the words of Christ here. I always like to point that out, not to take away from any of the other words that are in the Bible, because they're all the words of God, but these words that Christ spoke when he was on earth, these are direct quotes from Jesus to us. Christ is speaking directly to us. John 13, verse 34, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Now that part is not a new commandment. As we read at the beginning of our sermon from the book of Leviticus, that we are told to love our neighbors as ourselves. But the new part is that Christ magnified it. And magnification isn't quite a good enough word, because he magnified it greatly. Going on, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. That is a magnification. Not just as we love, not just that we love each other as we love ourselves, but that we love each other with the love that Christ has for us. Going on, it says that you also love one another. By this will all know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Our love for one another proves to the world that we are disciples of Christ. Christ said that we're to have the love for one another that he had for us. Christ had so much love for us that he did the unimaginable, the unthinkable. He laid down his life for his creation. Not only that, he allowed his creation to take his life. There is no analogy I can give that helps express that act. I always like when someone gives an analogy. You know, this would be like this happening. There is no analogy possible that would help us to have a better expression of what Christ did for his creation. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, we'll be starting in verse 43, reading through verse 44. Again, Christ's words, Matthew chapter 5, verse 43. You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use and persecute you. Of course, God never taught to hate your enemy. But apparently, it was such a common view in Christ's time that it wasn't unthinkable that people would have heard it, because he said, you have heard. This was not teaching of God. But Christ said that our love must be to the level that we love even our enemies. This was a complete change for the people of his time, because they had a saying that they would hate their enemies. Today's the anniversary of D-Day, the beach landing at Normandy during World War II. It was a turning point for the war. There are many stories of bravery and heroic acts that came out of that war. One that comes up now and then that we'll hear about is that a soldier would throw himself on a grenade that was thrown into the trenches, sacrificing himself for his fellow soldiers. An act of love, for sure. Probably with no more of a thought than that it was the only way to save those who were around him. But no one ever threw themselves on a grenade with the thought of, this is for the person who threw the grenade, so they don't have so many deaths on their conscience. If we're to have love for even our enemies, how much more should we have love for our spiritual family? We must not let our love wax cold. Choose to love. Choose to love in times of chaos. Love in times of turmoil. Love when it's inconvenient. Love when it's not practical. Love when the only reward for doing so is that you are building the character of God. Love others when they don't agree with your opinion, because to them, their opinion is just as important to them as yours is to you. In all things, at all times, make a choice to reflect the love of Christ.